Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
The forced energy. I'm with you today. We gotta try to figure out how to pick the vibe up for our listeners. But yesterday was a bad day at the office. One of the ones where you have like two of them a season and you just don't want to do anything the very next morning. So we got to snap out of that pretty quickly here so we don't churn out a shit show.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you love a mental health day, but this time of year it doesn't really allow for it. And the cherry on top, of course, is watching the Yankees go to extra innings, have a chance to put a stranglehold on the series against the Astros, and letting a glorious opportunity slip away in Houston.
Yeah, I tried to get away, although my getting away just never works. So I have like the Pittsburgh game on in the background on mute, and I got the Yankees game on mute, and I'm watching a Sebastian Maniscalco stand-up on Netflix to kind of change my mood a little bit. And I end up getting into the Yankees game. I stay up to like 1:20 or whatever it is, and they just crap the bed. So that stunk. Stayed up to watch that mess.
It's one of those days, and we'll pick the energy up a little bit. Our loyal listeners are going out there. Hey, no one's going to play the small violins. You get knocked down, you get yourself back up. But normally we'll start the show with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And of course, we're going to get to that. We have Dr. David Chiao, who will join us later to talk about some of the injuries, not only from a gambling standpoint, but fantasy as well. Of course, a full breakdown on what should be a good and hopefully entertaining Monday Night Football game between the Lions and Packers, and some look-ahead lines. And Payne, normally I say I want to be a glass half full and talk about the good from what we saw yesterday, but I'm going to go the other way. Misery loves company, so I want to ask you, which team had the worst loss of the weekend in your opinion? The Tennessee Titans, who put up a giant goose egg and may have sealed the fate of Marcus Mariota as their starting quarterback in Nashville. The Dallas Cowboys, who lose for the third straight week in a row, go on the road against the Jets, spot them a huge lead, try and come back valiantly and come up just short. The Atlanta Falcons, who can't seem to do anything right and get out of their own way. And, of course, the Los Angeles Chargers, who yet again decide they're going to spot their opponent a 3-score lead, try and come back and not be able to complete the feat.
As my mind races going down that list of options you just gave me, I'm going to say, and I'm going to outline it this way, the Cowboys actually took money against the Falcons. I didn't really see much there. I thought the line was pretty good, and the Chargers took money against. So let's go with the Titans. That was just miserable. And because it was such a bad investment, I made myself watch the entire game, every snap of it. So I don't know what Marcus Mariota is. I think he's done. I don't know how you can re-sign him, especially if you're Tennessee. And I think they're trending that way, right? I don't know who makes a play on him in the offseason either. And maybe it's a system that allows him to use his legs a little bit more, rolls out a little bit more, a little more play action, whatever it is. Just maybe a new change of scenery is going to work. But Mariota had 6 successful plays total the first 10 drives. The Titans had a 17% success rate with Mariota in the game. And, you know, we like Vic Fangio as a defensive mind, raved about him last year with the Bears and thought it was, I don't know if I want to say we thought it was a great hire. It was certainly better than what the Broncos had a season ago at the helm, and they probably should have a few more victories than what currently sits in the win column. But as a defensive mind, Vic Fangio's good, but most of yesterday was Mariota's just absolute horrificness, and I think it was squarely on his shoulders. I thought the play calling was, again, pretty predictable. Arthur Smith isn't that guy, and that was a question mark we had in the offseason. It was just like these first down runs, second down runs. I'm all about establishing the ground game. I get it. You have Derrick Henry. That's the DNA of your team. And of course, you obviously have a Broncos team that hasn't shown an ability to stop the run so far. But even the third and five, they throw a ball 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage to a running back. I mean, it was pitiful. It was painful to watch. I made myself go through it. I was texting you, and it was middle of the second quarter because I could see how this was trending, and we were still well within touch. Tennessee was just looking for like a shot of life, and I was like, when do we go to Ryan Tannehill? And as like a former Dolphins fan and someone obviously who had money on the Titans, that was a question I didn't think I'd ever propose again, but there we were. So he finally comes in, and it was probably three possessions late, I think, right? But I'm looking at his numbers, and Tannehill was actually decent, man. His completion percentage was 14% higher than expectation. That was the second highest mark of the entire weekend of any quarterback. One third of the time on the field, he doubled Mariota in both completions and yards. And I actually think, and you know, give me your thoughts on this. I actually think we had a shot at covering, not only if he comes in three possessions earlier, I even think we have a real shot of covering, if not for the offensive pass interference call.
Yes.
Because that was the break they were absolutely dying for. That was the piece of momentum, and it was a third and six. It's a 42-yard play to the Denver 24, and they get called for offensive pass interference on A.J. Brown. And what's so like mind-boggling to me there, and again, I cut you off, so I want to hear your thoughts on this. Kareem Jackson
Go ahead.
Kareem Jackson, they've moved him defensively. He was a corner in Houston. They moved him to strong safety, and he's only like 190 pounds soaking wet, but he is very physical for his position all day, though. He's the most physical guy in the field. He's chirping. He's celebrating after plays. And the one time someone reciprocates some physicalness with him, they call offensive pass interference. I thought that really bailed out Denver. And if we get a touchdown there, I'm pretty convinced you're down six at that point. Everyone's looking at themselves like, holy shit, we've played the worst game known to mankind. We're a score behind. We got a new quarterback in. We got a shot of life. And it then applies pressure on Joe Flacco, and maybe he turns it over. He wasn't forced to even make a turnover yesterday because he just handed the ball off and dinked and dunked it.
Yeah, Denver's offense didn't exactly have to do a whole heck of a lot in that game. You mentioned the offensive pass interference, Kareem Jackson flopping like it's an NBA game out there. But hey, to his credit, he got the call, and there's nothing you can do. From a Titans standpoint, I would have liked to see Tannehill honestly come into the game after they get the fortunate interception, the ball that bounces off of Noah Fant's back.
Yes.
That he loses in the sun. I think that's where you have the momentum. You're starting a possession, you know, essentially at midfield. You bring Tannehill in there. He gives you a shot of life. You take a deep shot, try and do something. They promptly go three and out. And it was at that point that I really thought a bet that had been on life support to begin with, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, really got the fifth of probably six nails put in the coffin.
So, here's the interesting dynamic, because I think if you're a Titans fan, or I think if you're a Marcus Mariota fan, you're thinking to yourself, well, that would have been too early. But think about what the organization said here about Mariota. They haven't extended him, right? And you brought in Ryan Tannehill for a reason. And it was because there's question marks about Marcus Mariota. So it wouldn't have been a slap in the face in my mind, because the writing's been on the wall here the entire offseason.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. This Titans team has plenty of flaws, and it's far from a complete masterpiece at this point. But Marcus bears a brunt of that responsibility. It was on full display. We'll see how the Titans bounce back this coming week when they play host to the Los Angeles Chargers. Other than that, Payne, as far as some of the other games, player performances, what kind of things stood out to you for what you saw thus far in NFL Week 6?
Kirk Cousins.
Hell of a day.
Once he got called out, he stepped up his game. Kudos to him. Looking at some of his metrics right now, 8 for 13 on passes greater than 10 yards, 3 for 6 with 2 touchdowns on throws 20 or more yards. He was insanely accurate. He led the NFL in completion percentage above expectation. And what's really interesting to me, and I think the biggest part of this entire game, once the Eagles cut the lead to 4 late in the third quarter and applied some pressure back on the Vikings offense, and you're thinking to yourself like, oh shit, here we go again, like Cousins could implode. And we've seen them implode in those situations once the pressure gets put back on them. Instead, Cousins leads the Vikings on these back-to-back drives of 75 yards and 88 yards to kind of rip the life fully out of the Eagles. So it wasn't just the accuracy. It wasn't just, you know, the numbers and the metrics. Mentally, I think that was a big hurdle for Cousins and that offense to get over.
No doubt about it. And you look at the performances. He got Stephon Diggs to step up. Fantasy superstar with his particular stat line, 7 catches, 167 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I'm sure Vikings fans can only hope that's the Kirk Cousins that they see with regularity, because that team becomes as dynamic as anybody in the NFC. Did want to ask you about the Rams 49ers game and what the hell is going on with this Rams offense. Yes, I know they're banged up on the offensive line, but let's not kid ourselves. That was about as piss poor an effort as you're going to see offensively from a team not named the Tennessee Titans, or even in some cases, the Miami Dolphins.
You know, listen, Goff's only 25. And, you know, most of our loyal listeners know my feelings now on Goff. And there needs to be a great situation around him. And that's not the case right now. Right, he doesn't have the best back in the league anymore. He doesn't have a stud offensive line creating kind of this like halo effect around him, right? And we just have to be honest about some of our assessments. We love Sean McVay, but to me, he's kind of been in his own head since the Super Bowl loss to Bill Belichick. And right before the half, I think we kind of saw that. McVay, I don't know what he's doing. He effectively runs back-to-back dive plays from jumbo with a backup running back. It was like I was watching a defensive coordinator call plays. So he's got to get it figured out top to bottom. In total, I'm looking at all this data now that we've downloaded. Goff did not have a single completion of 10 or more yards. 0 for 5 on throws longer than 10 yards. One completion for Goff greater than 5 yards. And that's with, you think about this, 10 days to prepare versus 6 for the 49ers.
1.7 yards per pass, Payne. 1.7. And he's gotten, I mean, if you try to extrapolate out the millions he's collecting, that should never happen.
$36 million on the cap next year. So that's going to be really interesting to see if they can surround him with talent. But I think, again, you're probably, and I don't want to call Gurley done, but you're a dynamic running back and probably two linemen away and maybe even a receiver away from getting back to where you were. You know, the biggest thing for me as I watched a little bit of that game, and it was the opposite of the Cousins effect, right? Like a quarterback needs to be a leader, not just like physically. And you mentioned the 1.7, that's not going to cut it, but mentally, right? You get stopped before half from the one, and then you fumble the first play out of the break. And I get it. It sucks. But at that point, San Francisco gets it back after the fumble, and they're only up one score. That's it, one score. And the offense just had zero energy. Goff looked lifeless out there. It wasn't a guy that they other players looked to build them up, and he didn't show signs of a leader. That was the biggest takeaway for me, aside from the horrific numbers yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about it that's scary if you're the Rams is it's not as though the 49ers put together a perfect game. I mean, they only average 4.4 yards per play. We know the defense is probably one of the more underrated, or was coming into the season, stop units out there. But good Lord, if you're going to tell me the Niners average 4.4 yards per play against a Sean McVay-led offense that has extra time to prepare, I think you're running over men, women, and children to lay the modest price at a field goal. Of course, that doesn't quite come to fruition. Did want to ask, do you have your resume ready to go, Payne? Because the Atlanta Falcons might be looking for a head coach sooner rather than later, despite Arthur Blank giving Dan Quinn a show of confidence. That effort yesterday to get down 17 to Arizona in a must-win situation. Hey, you get a hat tip for coming back, and I know they're a missed extra point away from forcing overtime, but they should never have been down that big a margin to the Arizona Cardinals.
Game plan doesn't look very crisp. Doesn't look like there's much emotion out there. I've kind of called for the Dan Quinn firing early in the offseason. And I just don't think he's a very good coach. And you look at the talent on this roster, and there's a lot of names on there. But my guy Freeman looks like he's about done. And Matt Ryan had a great come-from-behind performance. You miss a point after. And they got jobbed. There was like 3 calls that were absolutely horrific, and they were game-changing. They were like a fumble. They were massive. It's not crying over spilt milk. They were huge, impactful blown calls by the officials, and I'm sure the NFL will come out and apologize at some point in the next 24 hours for how bad the officiating was in that game. But not very good. I think they're getting old. I haven't liked Dirk Cutter. That's who Dan Quinn hired. Not for me. When I look at what they were able to do offensively, it looks okay from the full metrics breakdown, full game. When I kind of parse this out a little bit and look at just the first half metrics, it's a completely different ball game. 5.1 yards per play in the first half. And so when you allow 8.6, you're going to be down trailing at the break. The one thing I will say, though, I like what I saw from Arizona. I've been hesitant, and I get that it was the Atlanta defense they went against, but the big takeaway for me in that entire game was it looked like the Cardinals were able to get their red zone offense figured out. And we had talked about that a little bit. Yeah, they're moving the ball between the 20s, but Kliff needs to figure out what's going on in the red zone, because you can't run 4 and 5 wide sets as your space shrinks, and we know their offensive line's an issue, so they haven't been able to run the ball. So teams are effectively just playing 4 down linemen, 2 linebackers, and they're dropping everybody else in coverage because of this 4 receiver set, and they don't think they're testing them. So they run the ball on us. So they got touchdowns on their trips into the red zone yesterday, and I think that was obviously the determining factor, because if they don't turn those red zone trips into touchdowns, they're obviously not winning the game. But I thought it was a very good performance from Arizona in the red zone, and that's the reason they won the game.
One last game, Payne, that I wanted to get your take on. It was the Texans-Chiefs game, and I know we previewed it about going into the week talking about, hey, here's what the number was doing. Here were some of the cluster injuries, the expectations. That price ultimately closes 3.5, but Kansas City gets off to a fast start, builds a 17-3 lead. However, the Texans pretty much dominated that game from that point forward, winning the time of possession battle, 39 minutes and 48 seconds to a shade more than 20, despite the Chiefs having a plus 0.9 net differential in yards per play. The difference, of course, being the Texans run 83 plays from scrimmage, the Chiefs only 46.
Weird game. I actually lost a few bucks on it. And I didn't go against the move, but after doing some digging, after the move kind of materialized and then team totals opened based on the current market price of Sunday, we're looking at 29.5 on the team total. And so I took a little stab on the over with the Chiefs team total, just thinking there was multiple ways to win it, right? They didn't need to cover the number, but if they got in a shootout, you could eclipse it that way. And if they were leading in the game, it was likely predicated because or came about because of their offense. So obviously you jump out and score 17 in the first quarter. That looks like you're going to cash pretty easily. And then we had two situations in the first half there where 1st and 10 from the Texans 32, 1st and 10 again on a different possession from the Texans 33, came away with 0 points on both those trips. Patty Mahomes was not very good yesterday, despite Tariq Hill coming back. Wasn't very accurate, made the boneheaded decision there while they were leading, right? 1st and 10 from the Houston 32, 1st down, back foot kind of. He was Texas Tech's quarterback reincarnated there, just made a mental mistake. So I didn't love what I saw there. And then late in the game, the problem that we have seen for years now is Kansas City cannot stop the run, couldn't get off the field late in the fourth quarter. The Texans just owned them in the trenches, 4 yards a clip here, 5 yards a clip here, just ate away the entire fourth quarter. Mahomes couldn't even get the ball back. So there is some issues there for KC, obviously. The injuries are certainly hurting them along the offensive line. We have now seen a little bit of the blueprint that we kind of pointed out 2 weeks ago when the Colts faced them. The Texans did at least a good job mimicking that offensively, getting their ground game going. And that's really what helped them seal the deal here. 192 rushing yards, 4.7 a clip for a 56% success rate. Chiefs just didn't have a chance to possess the ball enough.
And Kansas City will have a pretty quick turnaround this coming week when they go on the road for divisional games. Yep. So I think it allows for a logical segue.
Team that wants to run the ball, too.
Yep, exactly. Into some of the look-ahead numbers here and how the markets reacted To what we saw this past weekend. So if we look at that Broncos game playing host to Kansas City, look ahead number had the Chiefs a 4.5, 5-point road favorite. Current number at Foxbet has Kansas City a 3.5-point road favorite with a number trending towards 3. Agree, disagree? I know we'll preview this game in greater detail, so I don't want to give away the secret sauce right now.
I would, I can tell you the initial move, despite it being this early in the week, is real on Denver. And I think when you look at Denver, they probably could have at least two more wins on their resume. I mean, this could be a 4-2 football team right now. And what they do is kind of what the Chiefs are having an issue with. And you pick up a win here, and I don't want to, I always hate this. It's so cliche, like this is the season. But it's the season for Denver, because if you can win here, you're a game back. And so all in effort, you have the advantage of playing in Mile High on a short week, altitude. So, and you have some matchup advantages. And the one thing that's kind of stuck out is Denver made some adjustments along the defensive line, which has really helped them stop the run the last 2 weeks. So if you can get some pressure on Patty Mahomes with some backup linemen and the way the secondary is playing right now, with some guys getting a little healthier in that area, it presents a tall task. Now at 3, am I going out and running? No. But at the opener of 4.5, that was certainly real. And I, again, sorry for rambling here. We'll talk about it on Thursday's podcast.
Yeah, pretty crazy the dynamics of the AFC West. We all thought Kansas City was going to run away and hide. Suddenly the Chiefs put together a 2-game losing streak. They go on the road to play a tough divisional game. The Chargers appear to be in disarray. And lo and behold, Oakland gets an outright win against the Chicago Bears, has a bye week to heal up, and will have a big game against Lambeau Field as the Packers will come into that one on a bit of a short week themselves. Down to the Georgia Dome, and two teams very desperate for different reasons. A look-ahead number had the Rams a 4-point favorite, taking on the Falcons. Your current number at Foxbet only has the Rams laying a field goal. You have already seen some over money come in, despite this game being open for about 47 minutes.
Yes. Two teams that are clearly struggling here. This needs to be the get healthy game. We'll have to monitor the status of Gurley. I honestly thought he was worth 0 to the spread. And I honestly thought that having Henderson in the game might actually provide the offense an added element of burst. I was wrong. So when I look at this number, what was the look? I just said 4. It reopened 3.5. We're down to 3. I want to monitor some of those injuries because there's a slew of them. I feel like this is a game we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I think it may make the list for all the wrong reasons on Thursday.
Yeah, it's sick to say this, but I'm not totally shocked that this has come off the 3.5, as bad as Atlanta has looked.
Well, we'll see. Somewhere along the way, you have to think that the Falcons are going to put their best foot forward. Maybe it comes this week against the Rams. They're looking for a bit of an identity.
There's some issues with the Rams, and it starts with their head coach. He has got to get some of his confidence back. He's got to, I mean, I was stunned to see what they were doing with 10 days to prepare. It was like, I don't know what happened. He looked like a completely different man. It was like his soul was taken from him and it hasn't returned. Like Belichick has not returned it back to him. Something's wrong there. So probably a game we'll talk about on Thursday.
Bears and Saints. The Saints own a piece of my soul, given how these games have gone over the last couple of weeks. You're looking at the Bears coming off of a bye, now a 3.5-point favorite at Foxbet. Look ahead here, had the Bears only a field goal favorite. I find this interesting pain to move off of a key because New Orleans takes professional money against them, and their defense looks as dominating as ever in that 13-6 workmanlike effort against Jacksonville.
Oh, man. I have to say, Teddy Bridgewater is not doing really anything, but everyone around him.
He hasn't had to do anything with the way everybody else around him has stepped up.
Everyone around him has stepped up. They've bought in. It's, you know, win one for Teddy. He's a great dude. Everyone loves him. And so the defensive side of the ball has been absolutely lights out. the defensive line, the front seven has been as good as it gets. And there's a lot of professional bettors thinking, hey, what this defensive line maybe wilt a little bit in the Florida humidity, because they have really been the reason, and there's just been full-blown energy and effort now for 3 weeks from that unit. Could they maintain it in the Florida heat? And that kind of was emphasized in the second half. They look just fine. Now, the other thing that's really just kind of annoying, I can't figure out, and I'd love to talk to someone, and we're going to kind of send a note to someone who really just dives into the film and the X's and O's. I don't know how anyone allows Michael Thomas to beat them. It is either this offense has become it's either a dump off to a running back, or we're locating Michael Thomas on a third and medium, a third and critical play, and somehow Michael Thomas is open every freaking time. I don't understand it. I don't understand what the teams are game planning for. There's got to be some type of brilliance that we're not seeing from Sean Payton in this offense, because there's no way Michael Thomas is ever beating me in the exact scenario that's going on for this New Orleans offense. And the interesting part was Kamara, he was a little bit limited. He got injured. He got banged up, if you remember, earlier in the, or towards the later part of last week. He was questionable to even play on Friday, and he didn't have his usual burst. So him not being 100%, we still allow Michael Thomas on that critical drive when it's 6-6 to just basically be open on every critical third down. Like, it was maddening to watch that.
He sat wherever he wanted to when he needed to inside that zone, and I couldn't quite figure it out to save the life of me.
It was unbelievable. So, you know, when you look at potentially this matchup, in a pretty good Chicago defense, although not as good as last year, you would hope that we're going to make sure Michael Thomas doesn't beat us. It's got to be somebody else. But kudos to New Orleans for stepping up around Teddy Bridgewater. But interesting to see where this goes, and interesting to see what the vibe of this game is if we get to a normal three when larger limits arise.
Oh, and this is a game, of course, we will preview in greater detail on the Thursday edition of the Bet the Board podcast, along with the Sunday nighter between the Cowboys and Eagles, a battle of teams sharing similar 500 records right now. And when I look at this number, Payne, look ahead number had the Cowboys a modest 2.5-point favorite. We see both teams lose, albeit in slightly different fashions. And Fox Bet has the Cowboys now a full field goal favorite, albeit at minus $1.20 if you want to back the underdog.
Lots of injuries here. And so when I look at Dallas, we have to find out what's going on with Amari Cooper. I know we'll be asking Dr. Chow about that here shortly. What's going on with their offensive line situation, because they've been without their left and right tackle. And so when you think about Dallas's offense in a nutshell, what do they want to be? And it's evident, right? They signed Zeke to all this money. They want to be a run-first team. And it's tough to do that without two of your best offensive linemen. And we've seen what the Dallas passing game has looked like with the addition of Amari Cooper. Without him, we're kind of back Dallas team we had for the first month of last season. And
Michael
so,
Gallup ain't a bona fide number one.
And he's, to his credit, he's muscling through some things right now. So you are right. He looks a lot better when people have to focus on Amari Cooper, and that's kind of the hand in hand as the offense goes. So this is really interesting, and it's usually for me it's a play on or a pass the game for Philadelphia, just with how savvy they are analytically and the information they get. So you know it's tough for me to make a case to go against them most weeks, although the Vikings certainly took a lot of professional money this past weekend, and kudos to those guys for sticking to their guns and laying it with the Vikings.
So again, we'll figure out exactly who will or won't be available for both of those respective teams. But you mentioned Dr. Chow Payne, and there's a reason he joins us on this show to talk about what we've seen over the past weekend.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you're hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can, of course, follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. And Dr. Chow, we'll get into tonight's game in just a few moments. I know you told us last week we chatted Devontae Adams was going to be a long shot, so curious to get an update there. But we had some major players not play on Sunday, and the Rams might have needed a lot more help than just Todd Gurley. What have you seen or heard about this deep thigh bruise that kept him out of the game against the San Francisco 49ers?
Well, I think it's a compilation of things. Because the thigh bruise was on the same side as his arthritic knee, that made things harder. And, you know, I think clearly the Rams need him, and I think they chose to rest him because of the knee issue and the thigh bruise on the same side, just to make sure that he could be effective the following week. So I do think Todd Gurley will be back. I don't think it's a long absence. And he'll still be the same guy, which is the new guy, which is no longer the bell cow, still a good running back, an excellent running back, but not 20-plus touches a game, you know, a dozen or so, 15 at most.
Payne, one thing, I know you have a bunch of injuries you want to ask. Just a quick follow-up on that, Dr. Chow. When you look at Todd Gurley, his workload, the arthritic knee condition, is the only solution long-term to try and keep him playing at a high level just to monitor his workload? Is that going to be the course going forward for the Rams as long as Gurley is going to be successful at the running back position?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's still the same Todd Gurley, just not the same number of reps. You can't go Christian McCaffrey on him or pre-this year Todd Gurley on him with 300-plus touches. But watch out here. Don't sleep on Todd Gurley. It's possible late in the season, a special playoff game or something, if the Rams get there, that they unleash him and use him a little bit. They just can't. They clearly can't do it week in, week out is the deal.
Another offensive weapon with what appears to be a quad injury, Dr. Chow, Amari Cooper, left in the first quarter against the Jets, didn't return. They clearly missed him. Do we expect him out there next Sunday with first place on the line against the Eagles?
Well, you know, I was saying no, because, you know, look at the T.Y. Hilton example. Had came in with a quad issue and then left at halftime and then missed time after that. It's hard when you leave a game for a pre-existing injury. But there is some word coming from Ian Rappaport and others that this actually was a new quad bruise. And if that was the case and he didn't jump on that sideline pass, his last play that he played, because the quad was newly bruised, that can hurt, be sore initially, but get better quickly. So he's iffy for next week. I kind of had him ruled out for next week. I'd put him as iffy for next week against the Eagles. We'll have to follow up and see how he progresses.
We'll definitely be following your tweets on that one, Todd. I know you have Amari Cooper ownership in your fantasy league.
Oh, a little bit of a sore spot going into tonight, but we're not going to occupy Dr. Chow's time with that. But I'll tell you, as a DJ Moore owner as well with him on a bye week, might have to make a little small sacrifice to the fantasy gods in short order.
A quick one here, Dr. Chow, and it's obviously Saquon Barkley. Everyone knows how important he is to the Giants offense. Will he be out there against Arizona this week?
I believe he will. From the get-go, as you know, we said high ankle and we said 4 to 6 weeks. And he's made great progress. But all this he was going to play in 2 weeks wasn't going to happen, obviously. But this four-week mark, I think, is realistic. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play effectively. It's just fingers crossed that there is no aggravation, no one falls on it, et cetera.
Positive news for Giants fans there. And I just want to ask a question about the defensive side of the ball. Sunday Night Football, Stephon Tuitt, the pec injury for the Steelers. We know with them shuffling backup quarterbacks, the defense there is going to have to be a vital part of the team moving forward. What does it look like for Stephon Tuitt in the pec injury? And is it related to his previous bicep tear?
It should not be related to the previous biceps tear. By video, it was a fairly classic. He tried to dive and bring Phillip Rivers down with one arm, the right arm, and the arm gave out a little bit. By video, there is significant worry for the pec tendon rupture. I hope it's pec muscle. That's something you can come back from in a few weeks. But if it really is pec tendon, afraid it's a ticket to injured reserve and surgery. So we'll have to wait for confirmational news, but that absolutely is the fear.
Never a good thing when you lose such an impact player there, as you alluded to, Payne, knowing that some of the shortcomings that this Pittsburgh Steelers offense has. And Dr. Chow, you were great in terms of filling us in on how concussion protocol worked a few weeks ago. And I know it's not quite the same, but wanted to get your take on a couple lingering hamstring injuries. Clearly, the Browns look to be a franchise in disarray. We expected Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward to ultimately be back. What are some of the things that training staff has to look for as it pertains to a soft tissue issue, especially with a hamstring, for defensive backs to make sure these guys can actually get on the field and contribute at some point?
Well, I've been talking about it, and you know, at my injury index and profootballdoc.com, I have not expected the Browns to have their cornerbacks back yet from hamstring. First of all, it hasn't been that long. It seems like an eternity, but that's a very difficult injury for a cornerback to play through. And if you pull up lame on one play, you give up 6 points. And remember, what's the difference between, let's say, a wide receiver and a DB with this? The wide receiver, for the most part, knows where he's going at the snap of the ball. The DB has no idea and has to react, which makes it a lot harder on the hamstring. That's why I'm a lot more down on defensive players, especially in the open field with hamstring injuries. You really have to be a lot closer to 100% than someone on the other side of the ball. And, you know, that's you've seen a lot of different examples of this around the league, from Ronald Darby and other defensive backs, et cetera, this year with hamstrings.
It's always a tricky injury, I have to imagine, in a case-by-case example. And we talk about impact players. I know we hit on some of the marquee guys that saw their teams play on Sunday. We mentioned Davante Adams right off the top, the turf toe that'll keep him out tonight for the Lions. Is this going to be a week-to-week thing for them, or is there kind of a clearly defined timeline that someone of his skill set, his talent level, can go, all right, I'm going to target, you know, 2 weeks from now to be back on the field so Aaron Rodgers has his best weapon in tow?
Well, we've talked about this since that Thursday injury 2.5 weeks ago, and we said that it's a multi-week injury. Yes, it's not the worst turf toe in the world where it needs surgery and you're on injured reserve, but it's still a significant one. So we talked last week he wasn't going to be playing this week. I don't think we're at a guaranteed spot for next week either. I think November is more likely, and hopefully early November is a likely target for Davante Adams coming back.
And last but definitely not least, Aaron Rodgers showed up on the injury report this week. Some articles you read out of Green Bay say he's a little bit limited. Have you seen anything on film that Packer fans should be concerned about? This is a game that we'll break down in depth towards the latter end of the show, and there's been significant line movement in the Detroit Lions' direction.
Yeah, I don't see anything significant for Aaron Rodgers. Like, he's going to play through. Look at what he's done over the last few years, including last season with that MCL injury that he re-aggravated and continued to play through. So I don't have any doubt that he's going to perform. You know, is his mobility maybe going to be a little bit limited? Maybe. And I'm very curious to hear your assessment of Green Bay versus Detroit. And my eyes are on Aaron Jones after his performance last week, especially against the Detroit defense with a couple of D linemen banged up front. So I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say.
Perfect segue for us, Dr. Chow, as we have plenty of great nuggets we'll share with our loyal listeners. Encourage our folks to follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. Some of the best injury information you will get pregame, real time, and after the game, not only from the wagering perspective, but also the impact on the viability of your fantasy squad. Dr. Chow, can't thank you for your time each and every week here, and I'll look forward to chatting with you same time next week.
Thank you.
Interesting, Payne, to hear Dr. Chow's take on Todd Gurley, kind of piggybacking off what you said about this Rams offense, some of the confidence issues with Sean McVay. It almost feels as though, hey, look, it's not quite a breakup, but it's getting close, that McVay's got to find someone to replace the kind of productivity that Gurley has given him so reliably over the last couple seasons.
I think Dr. Chow hit it out of the park, and it's that he's going to have limited carries. You know, he's going to have limited touches. We saw Gurley really get involved in the game plan Thursday night on a short week, the first few possessions for the Rams, which was a little surprising to me on that short week. We thought he might be a little limited there. And then they basically ran him into the ground. Aside from the opening couple possessions, he had like the 1 yard touchdown run, but that was about it for productivity after that point. So he's going to be a 12 to 15 touch guy. And if you get into some more meaningful games late in the season, then it's probably balls to the wall. But I think this was the game plan from the onset, despite the Rams talking about, you know, nothing's wrong with them. Oh, the workload's going to be the same. Actions speak louder, and we're currently seeing those actions.
Yeah, go figure. A guy who doesn't even appear on the injury report most of the last postseason, all of a sudden can't seem to get his lower body healthy and where it needs to be. Just shows you the short shelf life that running backs have, especially if they're bell cows in the 2019 era. On to tonight's
How
game.
How old is he? Man, not I old. Feel like he's still so young.
Not old, man. Not old, but, you know, hat tip to him. He got his payday, thankfully, before.
25. He just turned 25 in August.
All these injuries started to really accumulate for him because there's no way he was getting paid. And if you're Ezekiel Elliott or any other running back, maybe it's Saquon Barkley dealing with the high ankle sprain that Dr. Chow mentioned, you do everything you can to try and get yourself paid at that position where you know you're not long for 300 touches a season.
The new CBA, or I shouldn't say the new, the one that's being proposed for 2021 by the players is going to feature less control from ownership on these rookie deals. They're trying to get them down to like 3 years. They're trying to have like running backs be compensated a little bit more. Not to go off on a tangent, but that what the players are suggesting to me, you know, with the use of marijuana, with a increase of percentage of salary cap money, plus now they want additional percentage of gambling funds. I don't see any way they're going to get all these things without going to an increased schedule. So that'll be interesting to monitor. But the life of these contracts, they want to shrink those on the rookie side so these guys can get paid a little bit more before they fizzle out going into their second deal.
Yeah, I'm all about these guys getting money while they can because we know that this is a league that's not exactly forgiving and it doesn't allow you a 15-year lifespan in the National Football League, especially playing that type of position. The reason we mentioned the ground game, it'll play a prominent role tonight, where Detroit finds themselves installed now as a 3.5-point underdog as they make the trip to Lambeau. Total in the game, 45.5 at Foxbet. And this number, Payne, has come down pretty consistently across the board all week long. And we look at some of the interesting notes that'll brew for this contest. Aaron Rodgers has thrown for 300-plus yards and achieved a passer rating of at least 100 in four consecutive Monday night starts, all resulting in Packer wins. In those four games, Rodgers completed 66% of his passes, averaged 350 yards passing, thrown 12 touchdowns against zero interceptions, passer rating of 120. But the Lions have really owned Green Bay in recent meetings, winning and covering each of the last four. Something has to give tonight. Can the Lions run the football effectively enough to keep Rodgers and company on the sidelines?
They're going to have to. And that's going to be, listen, similar to what we said about the Chiefs matchup before the Lions bye, right? Detroit's offense is going to do what it does. And that's established the ground game because they're a run first team with Kerryon Johnson. That's basically what's worked so far. It's their identity. It's who they've wanted to be. They've went out and drafted O-linemen. They went out and drafted a running back that they preferred best. And so that's the identity of the team. That's what we're going to get. And so when I look at this, it's not like other teams don't know that, right? If we're talking about it, I'm sure obviously other opponents know that. And Kerryon right now is facing an 8-man box over 32% of the time, but the ground game's still been working, and especially Kerryon Johnson. Despite those 8-man boxes, his success rate is 5% better than league average. When you look at how you want to attack the Packers defense, you want to be able to run the ball a little bit. And so right now, Green Bay is allowing runs to grade successful 12% higher than league average. It's second worst in the NFL. Mike Pettine, if you've listened to him this week and the last few weeks, he claims it's an easy fix. He thinks it's fundamentals. He thinks his guys need to get back to basics. He thinks guys in his front seven like aren't getting off blocks quick enough, or they're cheating and leaning the wrong way. Whatever it is, Green Bay's defense has not been very good against the run. Now, despite running not being as much of a factor in 2019, I think we're going to find out what the two units are, right? Because we know the Lions are run first. We know the Packers are struggling to stop the run. And right now, their schedules are kind of in opposite directions. So you look at the Lions' offense, they face the ninth easiest schedule of run defenses. So that could partially, obviously, contribute to their above-average success. The Packers have faced the sixth toughest schedule of run offenses. So maybe they're not as bad as the metrics are currently showing, right? The one thing here, and I think this is why it's important, and we kind of hammered it home against the Chiefs. The Lions want to be able to run the ball here, not just because that's their identity, but it sets Stafford up. right? And I think that's probably the big thing right now. When I look at some of his metrics, of the quarterbacks that have played in at least four games so far, Stafford has the seventh highest usage rate of play action. It's 29%. And so this all starts to make sense, right? He gets his stud tight end back in TJ Hawkinson tonight. He was a full go at practice. So that's another great weapon to have. You get your possession receiver back, it looks like, in Danny Amendola. He's questionable. He's been limited all week.
Oh, getting a call. Not an important one.
I hear it's an important one.
No, it's not an important one. Unless not they had the winner. Unless they had the winner tonight, absolutely free. But I don't think it was one of those calls.
Wouldn't shock me.
Inside information. So, I have to move on now, Payne.
There you go. You know, so you get Hawkinson back, which is good if you're going to run the ball and use the play action game. Danny Amendola, as I kind of mentioned, he's been limited all week in practice, but he's been back. It's a division game. He is a really tough guy. And unless, I guess, Olivia Culpa's in the picture, then he's not so tough. Can't blame him there. Good God. To me, though, the other thing that's important here is by far and away Detroit's toughest game up front, right? They faced a couple good pass rushing defenses, three that are above average, but this is far and away the Lions' toughest test up front. The Packers just get after it, man. They are so good getting pressure on the quarterback. It's what they've done all season. But Detroit, to their credit, seventh in adjusted sack rate allowed. So that there's just a lot of little intricate matchups here that I think are pretty interesting to see unfold. With Hawkinson back, you can play more 12. You can be a little more versatile. You can be less predictable. So if the Lions get their ground game going, and you would think, just based on all these metrics, based on the matchup, they'll be able to do that. And then if you can get Stafford going with it, play action off the ground game with Hawkinson back and Amendola back, it really should open some things up offensively for the Lions.
On the other side of the ball, Payne, you have been banging the drum and saying that, hey, look, the key to beating Green Bay is just weathering the storm early on until the script wears off. And the offense really lacks some of the creativity and some dynamicism that we've grown accustomed to with Aaron Rodgers. I think I said that word right. You look at Detroit, they play a ton of man coverage. Even without their top defensive player, they stayed true to their principles against Kansas City. We know the Packers' offense is down Davante Adams tonight, as Dr. Chow told us they would be a week ago at this time. The Lions, however, have struggled against the run, and Aaron Jones clearly gaining confidence, becoming the first running back with four touchdowns against the Dallas Cowboys. How do we see the matchup playing out here in terms of what Green Bay wants to do and what Detroit needs to take away before we even get to some of the injuries that Detroit may need to deal with on that defensive line?
You know, it's got to be the same thing. You got to keep it close early. And I think that's even a bigger point here, right? It's even more important because Detroit's coming off the bye. So it may take a little while to get back up to game speed. You mentioned Green Bay and their rushing attack. Right now, when you look at what they're doing early in these games, they've been able to run the ball pretty effectively despite facing a really tough schedule of run defenses, 11th in rushing success rate. They've been very good with the script early on, third in passing success rate in all their first quarters combined this season. So again, weather that storm, because the final three quarters combined, all games, Green Bay declines to 17th in rushing success rate, 28th in passing success rate. So you just got to survive that first quarter. Now, for Matt Patricia, to me, and we've bagged on him a little bit, he has shown an ability thus far to devise some pretty good defensive game plans against stiff competition. I don't know what it is. Maybe he gets up. Maybe that's what kind of gets his blood flowing. He knows a really good offense comes in, and he wants to kind of be the smartest man in the room. So he spends more time devising a game plan. Whatever he comes up with, he's been very good against the best teams, right? Beat Aaron Rodgers twice last season. Beat the Patriots and Tom Brady last season. He had the game plan for Mahomes as well. And if it wasn't for some poor turnover luck, the Lions likely win that home game against the Chiefs, but it's the same game plan that Frank Reich thought was good enough and employed on Sunday Night Football and got the Colts the victory with that Patricia game plan. So I defensively, I don't think we're going to have an issue with the game plan. The Lions are going to come out and they're going to play man. They're going to rush four or five. And I think that probably becomes a little easier to do when Darius Slay is back in the secondary. And, you know, the Packer offense is without Davante Adams. the two things that I think are important for Detroit's defense is, as you kind of alluded to, they got to figure out how to stop the run. And right now they've allowed 51% of runs to great successful. They're without Mike Daniels, who they acquired in the offseason. I believe they signed as a free agent. The Packers released him. It would have been a good game to have him here. Deshaun Hand is also out. A'shaun Robinson, he's questionable. Let's see if he goes. But you could have your three best interior defensive linemen out for the Lions, which is probably going to be pretty important. The other thing here is when they're not handling it off to Jones, you got to find a pass rush. You know, right now the pass rush is kind of that staple that Belichick has had with New England. It's more not about the parts, but it's this team pressure, right? It's about the scheme. Flowers needs to get a little more pressure right now. 15 pressures through four games. That needs to step up. He needs to get to the quarterback, because if you can get to Rodgers, and we know he's a little bit banged up, he's a little bit limited with the knee this week. Certainly, I don't think has a massive impact, but if you can get pressure on him, I think it's going to hurt a little bit. And some of his numbers under pressure have been very bad. 42% pressure rate on his dropbacks. It's the fourth most of any qualifying quarterback. We talked about that Packers O-line. Couple nice names on there, but they're getting up in age, and the other guys aren't very good. And when you look at when Aaron Rodgers is pressured, he's completing 46% of his passes. That's 20th among qualifying quarterbacks. So you got to figure out how to stop the run with a couple critical guys down in the defensive line. And if you can force Aaron Rodgers into a passer and get pressure, you're going to have some success there, especially with, I really like that line secondary, especially if Slay is back.
You surprised at all by the strength of this line move? We saw some shops open 6, 6.5, trending towards 3.
Let's peel back the curtain here. And I'm always kind of holding my breath sometimes. I shouldn't say always. Holding my breath on what I can say and can't say. But if you rewind back to last week, this was one of the games that we were bitching about a little bit, moving 7.5 days before the game was even played. And
I can find
verbatim the conversation.
I can find games to bitch about that are moving, 6.5 days in advance for next week too, if we want to try and keep that trend going.
Verbatim, and again, this was prior to us recording. Todd proposes the question, when should we be going on Detroit? And I'm like, it's 6 in the freaking morning. Let's wait till after we're done recording. And 6 minutes later, Detroit goes from 6 to 4.5. So I don't want to say what I have, because I'm sure someone will conjure it up and like buy a full point and do something that I wouldn't advise. But for transparency purposes, I do have some Detroit here at 4.5 even. So am I surprised to see it come down? No. But at 3, I don't think you're wanting Detroit here. And I think there's people that could probably make a case for Green Bay at 3, because their home field advantage is 3.5. So this number at 3, if you're dealing it, suggests one of two things: that you believe Detroit's better than Green Bay, or that Aaron Rodgers is significantly banged up. That's what this number at 3.2 could only suggest those two things.
And even crazier when you look at some of the numbers that are forecasted out there and some shops have available. Detroit, a pick'em against the Minnesota Vikings next Sunday. So it doesn't take a math wizard to connect the dots here and try and figure out the pecking order as far as how odds makers view this trio of teams right now on a neutral field. But wasn't sure how much we wanted to get into that, wanted to give the opportunity, but it's definitely an interesting game given a lot of those examples, on-field matchups, what we've seen unfold in the sports books, and everything else that'll go into completing the full picture here. So,
yeah, we're not like, this isn't a revelation, right? I mean, we all have an odd screen. You can see the game got smoked, and I know a lot of people always ask, and we're constantly getting new listeners because of the market trending upwards with new bettors. But, if you have an odd screen, even without having the best information in the world, figure out which sports books are sharp, figure out which sports books are square, figure out the type of clientele these sports books take. And so just grazing across the screen, you see some of the sharpest outs dealing 3 on this game, or soft 3.5. You see some of the square outs dealing 4. So you know, being able to read a market is extremely vital into your handicapping process. And it doesn't necessarily have to come from someone in the know.
No, I think you take advantage of all the tools at your disposal. And I know we have listeners out there who appreciate the way that we do things very differently than a lot of other folks in the sports gambling space. We're transparent with our results, good, bad, or indifferent. And we have a game like the Titans that doesn't go the way we draw it up. We let you know the same way we let you know when we have a game that we thought we mapped out perfectly on Saturday for the USC Trojans, giving it out at plus 11, game closing at 10 most spots, and then ultimately getting there with a resurgent second half. So it's all about...
Let's emphasize that a little bit. And I know, you know, we kind of addressed the Titans in like a 9-minute diatribe at the top of the show with Marcus Mariota and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, that was at the very front of the show. So I don't, you know, no one's running from it. But I think the more important thing here is there's going to be points in the season where it's a grind. And that's kind of what we've done for the last 3 weeks. We flip-flopped wins and losses. 3-3 the last 3 weeks. It's certainly annoying, but it's an extremely small sample size. And I think to the point of sample size and just investing in general, you want to increase your sample size. So, you know, I don't get much praise, and we don't need it. We're not asking for it. But we don't get much praise when USC wins on Saturday and there's, you know, hellfire when Tennessee doesn't cover on Sunday. So it can't be one or the other, right? So the point to this is, if you don't like college football or you don't like the NFL, this is an investment process. Do you really need to like something if you have an edge? And so far I can tell you, despite back-to-back losers in the NFL, we're hitting 62% this season on best bets, and we've hit over 60% since inception in 2014. So this is a small sample size sport. We're giving out one best bet per week, 17 weeks. You could be the greatest sports bettor in the world. You could have the largest edge in the world, and you could go 0-17. You could employ your dog to crap on the morning section of the sports, and wherever the feces lies, that's the team you play, and you go 17-0. So the sample size is so small. The point is, you want to be betting both the college best bet and the NFL best bet. When you hand your advisor a check for six figures and he says, hey, this is what we're investing in, you say, well, I don't really like the CEO of that company. I don't know if we should be investing in that, right? When you get your monthly statement, I know we all watch these things, I think. I don't, but you know, the casual fan will watch this for entertainment. That's not really a thing, right? Like when you get your statement at the end of the month from your advisor, do you sit there and like stare at the sheet for 4 hours for entertainment? No. You don't. So same concept here. I would strongly encourage to increase your sample size and lessen the variance by playing both the college and the NFL best bets, regardless if you favor one sport or the other, or you hate one sport and love the other. So that's my biggest thing here.
Well, you mentioned hellfire.
Sorry for the little rant there.
Hey, it happens. You mentioned hellfire.
I thought it was pretty positive. It wasn't like calling anybody
no,
out.
No. And I don't think we ever do that, because I think our listeners do a great job of keeping us honest. We've developed a quite a great rapport with a lot of folks, and encourage more of you guys that may not know the space. There's no such thing as a dumb question. So while we don't have a chance to always get to them, and over the last couple of years, we haven't gotten quite the same direction as answering some questions on Twitter, always broach some of those things. We want to make you guys and girls out there that listen every week smarter with your bets. We know that you all participate in various pick'em pools, stale lines, everything to take advantage of. And while we can't get to every single game, want you to try and see the process that we employ before we make an investment and how it can make you smarter, not only with your sports betting, but your other walks of life. And you mentioned the hellfire and brimstone that comes hurling down upon us, Payne, and we have a bad weekend. I don't even want to look at my Instagram direct messages for how I've performed on a TV show, where I reveal a lot more of my betting card each week. It hasn't been good. I don't sugarcoat any of it. It is a long season in a variety of different manners. And the reality of it is, we don't sit here, pound our chest, and say we're going to win 90% of the games. The goal is to turn a profit at the end of the season. And sometimes if you look at a 2 to 3 week window, or hey, it may even be a little bit longer, you have to ride the ebbs and the flows. And that separates those folks that are in this business for the long haul from those folks that are just trying to capitalize on a hot streak and utilize that to let themselves be heard from atop the mountaintops.
Let me see. I like a dunce. I downloaded the new software on the old iPhone.
Yep.
And so I don't know where any of my notes are. and this is really bad podcasting, and today hasn't been the best show. There hasn't been a lot of energy in life, but we can continue on with that theory. But let me try to find, and this could be really stupid to try to do this right now while I'm on the phone.
Yeah, I was going to say.
While I'm recording.
To try and fill the air. And no, folks, we don't have.
Oh, here we go. I found it.
All right, what do you
got for it? So here's kind of my point to this whole thing here. Well, this doesn't even need to be a topic at 8-5 this year with our best bets and over 60% since 2014. What I can tell you is last year, we finished over 59% on our best bets. And we had a run in college football in the NFL towards the middle of the season that was absolutely horrific. From week four, I'm looking at the sheet now, from week four through week 13 last year, and we didn't have a best bet one of the weeks, and there was one push involved. So we were we had a 2-6-1 run in the middle of NFL season last year on best bets, and we still finished 59% for the season. So both college and pro combined. So that's kind of the point here. It's like you want to lessen the variance, increase the sample size, and play both best bets, because we don't know what it's going to be. Obviously, when we invest, we have an edge in both these games. And to the point again, right, we take 2.5 on the Titans, or I think we gave out 2 to be really nice, and it closes pick 'em, and we take 11 on USC to be really nice. There was 11.5 out there, but we took 11, and it closed soft 10.5. So again, I know everyone just focused on the result, but again, both games beat the closing line, and so here we are. That's it. Let's wrap this thing up.
All right, we can wrap it up. I wasn't really listening to you there anyways. I was looking at the college football board starting to light up, so I appreciate the rant. Hopefully people found...
It wasn't really a rant.
I'm busting your balls. And for those folks who know that, hey, look, we're doing all of this. We like to try and break down some of these barriers and some of these topics there. And I'm sure a lot of people paying to go, hey, what the hell was all that? We don't care. We don't need your sob story. And that's fine. But for our
it wasn't a sob story. It was just very informational. If you guys want to just bet whatever you like, bet whatever you like. But I would, as any investor will tell you, you want to, if you have an edge and it's clear at this point, we do. You want to lessen your variance and increase your sample size. It's really ABC. Now let's get out of here.
All right, let's get out of Dodge. those folks, you can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. You can follow Payne there at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And of course, our Monday guest, Dr. David Chow, you can follow at Pro Football Doc as well. Best of luck with all of your wagers and investments tonight for Monday Night Football between the Packers and Lions. We'll be back with you on Wednesday breaking down the college football card in all of its glory. And in the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.